Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, February 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Late last week, producer Jim Lavoulis and I got the inkling that the fun drive this week may be a quick one. So we thought we would have a guest stand by for today, just in case there was a Vox Pop. And we had Rich Guthrie standing by. And little did we know there'd be a show yesterday as well, but it was an amazing fun drive. We have a regular broadcast day for you, and Rich Guthrie is here. He's an experienced birder. Also, Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited will join us to answer your bird questions. Give us a call on this Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Birds, right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds on the program today. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo are here to help answer your questions about them. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Nancy owns Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs, New York, which stocks supplies for feeding and observing birds. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Nancy and Rich, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ray. Great to be here.
Hi,
thank
Ray.
You.
So we thought, you know, we talked to you a couple of weeks ago you were on. And we said, hey, Rich, why don't you be on standby just in case the fun drive is quick? Who'd have thunk it?
Here we are.
One day.
Yeah.
And now we're back.
Terrific.
So it's great to have you
amazing.
Here. Great to have you both here today. Bad weather coming, though, eh? What do the birds do in the snow?
Well, they come to your bird feeders.
Even when it's snowing heavily?
Or even more so.
Really?
It's very dramatic to see the uptick in a number of birds and a variety of birds that show up at a bird feeder. Doing a storm such as what they're predicting for tomorrow and tonight and tomorrow.
They don't hang loose in the nest and
Now some of them will hunker down in a thick conifer or in a thick forsythia bush out there, but you know they got to eat, and that's when what we have to offer comes best use.
Yeah, they're looking for an easy source of food. You know, they still have only the daylight hours to recover from having survived a cold winter's night. So they're looking for the easiest source of, you know, and reliable source of food. So they do use the bird feeders quite heavily.
And they look around to see who's scoring. And they'll go around, they'll see, you know, the little sparrows coming to your bird feed, the guys that have been coming there every day for the last 6 weeks, and they'll say, okay, we'll try this diner. And this is when the green-tailed towhee will show up in your backyard.
Green-tailed towhee?
By golly,
what is
if
that?
It does, we want to hear about it.
What is the green-tailed towhee again?
Oh,
I forgot.
It's one I've not seen in New York.
Really?
Really. But they are out there. I'll wager that there is a dozen green-tailed towhees somewhere around the state of New York and nearby Vermont and Massachusetts, somewhere.
Okay.
They're out there.
And how would one recognize a green-tailed towhee aside from the green tail?
I recommend going to the Stokes Bird Field Guide or the one of the good field guides and looking it up. It's one of those rather nondescript, ordinary-looking little bird that will show up and you'll say, gee, that guy looks different.
Ah.
Now, it may not be the green-tailed towhee. It may be the spotted towhee, or maybe the golden-crowned sparrow, or any of those. You know, we love to have the white-throats and juncos and nuthatches and chickadees, but stand by. Be ready.
We got any stub towhees around here?
Only on a bad day.
There you go. Nancy, have you ever seen a green-tailed towhee?
Nope. I'm just looking it up because I had no idea what they look like, but they're gorgeous. That little cinnamon cap is...
It's a ground-feeding, sparrow-like bird that will show up, and probably, like I say, but that's the amazing thing. A lot of these super rare, mega rare birds that show up, many of them will show up at somebody's bird feeder, especially during or right after a storm like what they're predicting for tomorrow.
I'm amazed a bird can fly Well, maybe in snow, yeah, snow is fairly light. But what about sleet? I'm not an aerodynamic engineer, but I would think sleet and ice would weigh a bird's wings down.
And the chances are he's not going to go anywhere. He's going to stay where he or she found herself before the storm started. But as soon as it starts to let up, they'll search around. The bird's activity level will be increasing as the barometer goes down this afternoon. And they'll search around. They'll look around and see where they might put their place their bets for the morning.
So it's a good idea to fill your bird feeders tonight. Get them filled up with the seed that for your feeders. Suet, which is a real high fat product, so high fat, high calories. Mm. So it provides some of the calories that they need.
The timing of that, though. So if you fill up your bird feeder tonight, and then you have 7, 8, 10 inches of snow on it, how do the birds know there's any seed there?
They'll know.
Really?
And you want to have a covered bird feeder. This is not like it's going to be exposed to and buried by snow. You're going to have bird seed inside a little bird feeder that they can get access.
Yeah,
they can gain.
We really got hit by ice last night, so a lot of our bird feeders have weather guards over them. So, little domes to keep the seed dry and keep the birds dry. But there was so much ice last night that it dripped down, 8, 9, 10-inch long icicles, forming a cage around the feeders practically.
Yeah, so, ice storms are the worst.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
The worst.
You brought up the barometric pressure drop, and birds are very hip to this?
Oh, yeah. They're climatologists. They can tell you what's going on.
So if you watch the birds and the squirrels in advance, you know when
cows.
A bad storm is coming?
Yeah.
Well, the cows lie down, right?
Yeah,
is that the old wives' tale?
And the swallows fly low to the ground and that sort of thing. There's a lot of truth in that.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Costillo are here. Uh-oh. Dan in Albany. Dan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi there. I had a question about red-winged blackbirds. A couple weeks back in, mid-January, I was up in Williamstown, Massachusetts, teaching an animal tracking course for their winter study program. And we saw a red-winged blackbird out in the backyard of the center where we're at. Of course, they've got feeders set up and out there. And it just struck me, because I always look for that first sign of spring when I hear or see the red-winged blackbirds, and here it was the middle of January. Is that something that you see commonly?
No. But as they say, times, they are changing. That's what's happening. We're finding more and more of our summer birds overwintering, half-hardies, as we call them. And just the other day, I saw some red-winged blackbirds, and this is even the early part of February. But that happens, and that brings up a point, Dan, thank you, is that any day now we'll start seeing our spring migration beginning. Watch the sky. The turkey vultures will be coming back, the red-winged blackbirds, and after that, a whole parade of summer songbirds will be showing up.
We always talk about that, is that it's not the robin that is the harbinger of spring anymore. But like you said, Dan, the red-winged blackbird is one of those lead migrants and really help us remember that spring is on its way. The males will come back first, followed by the females.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Scott in Halifax, Vermont. Scott, you're on.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes. How about you?
I can hear you just fine. I've got a book to recommend. I saw it reviewed in the New York Times. It's put out by Princeton Press. It's a scholarly book. It's called Cat Wars. It's about the effects on birds and human beings of outdoor cats.
Good job. Yes. I recommend that as well. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
And while we're at it, I do want to mention that there are a variety of outdoor safe cat shelters, habitats, or
catios, they call them.
Catios, there you go. Thank
catios.
You.
Catios.
And for all those folks that like to see their cats roam around in the outdoors, something that I discourage very strongly, these little catios, or you can do it yourself, or you can order them online. You could go to a hardware supply store and get plans for it. These are recommended features that I strongly recommend. And the cats are very happy with them. There's a couple of them in my neighborhood in New York that I go down there and I visit. I compliment the folks for having them. And I look at the cats, and they're just like cats. They're just happy little cats.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. Also, Nancy Castillo. It's Bird Show here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Over to Patty in Otis, Mass. Hello, Patty.
Hi, Ray. Congratulations on the fun drive. I was supposed to be there today, but I'm happy not to be.
I was wondering where you were, but, you know, only one day. I guess we'll cut you some slack.
You'll cut me some slack. Yeah. So I had a question for Rich and Nancy. We usually have bird feeders out all the time, but for the last few months we weren't able to, and we put them back out about 3 days ago. And we haven't had one single bird come, and I'm wondering what we can do to attract them back, to let them know we're back.
Bring in a snowstorm.
Right. So it's funny that you said to the previous caller, fill up the bird feeder. Everything's full and ready to go. We've got the good nut and fruit mix. We've got the sunflower. We've got the suet. We've got the thistle. They're all out there. So hopefully somebody will show up with the storm, huh?
Yeah. Right now, I'm wishing I were a bird.
Yeah. I guess it's really a good lesson, Patty, in that, you know, the birds do seek out their winter food sources earlier in the year so that, you know, so if they did scout yours out, they will return to it and find that they are filled. Make sure that you're also spreading some on the ground.
I did. The squirrels ate all that. Yeah.
Continue to provide a little bit on the ground. You might get some activity on the ground from
like
sparrows.
The green tail towhee.
Yeah, yeah, really. but that might also invite some activity.
Yeah, we unfortunately had to take them in for a little bit because we had a little bear escapade, and we really wanted to be sure that they forgot about our house as a food source and were in hibernating. So
smart move.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might see some activity over the next couple days, though.
Well, Patty, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com. And Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, for 14 years, offering plant, spirit medicine, and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit, clarepearson.net.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's a bird show today. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo. And Rich Guthrie, your schedule is packed as usual.
Hey, lots of fun coming up. Friday night this week at 7 o'clock, we're doing an owl prowl and a lunar eclipse watch. Let's hope the clouds part by then.
Yeah, you know, Bob Berman was a little sketchy on the whole lunar eclipse. It's not the most exciting of lunar eclipses.
This is a lunar eclipse, not a solar eclipse.
But it's a minor lunar
eclipse. Oh, no, it's a magic moment nonetheless.
Okay. All right, fine.
We got the blood moon coming
by
up.
By the gag. All right, that's
here
fine.
We go.
All right.
And the owl prowl, this is down at the Willows, south of Athens in the Greene County, New York.
Yeah.
This is put on by the Greenland Trust. And you could get more information by going to their website, greenlandtrust.org. And that's green with a magic E at the end because it's the Greene County. Greenlandtrust.org.
And you talked about owl prowls before, and it's tough to see owls. You're listening for them.
We're going to be trying to talk them into talking to us.
Okay.
And if we see one, that's even greater.
Okay.
But it's all about how you go about owling, and that's going to be Friday evening, 7 o'clock. Off we go.
Okay. You're not going to ask for a call.
Huh?
You're not going to ask him for a call.
I don't know. He's kind of doing this on charity. All right, you want to do an owl call?
Right after we do this.
All right.
I want to tell you about Saturday, the Eagle Train, going to look for the Eagles down on Metro North. We're going to go from Poughkeepsie down to Croton Point for the Eagle Fest
there.
Saturday, all day Saturday at Croton Point, the Eagle Fest. So at 9 8:50 in the morning, we're going to board a train down there in Poughkeepsie.
Right.
We're going to have a special gathering, and on the way down, we're going to talk about the eagles. We're going to look for the eagles along the Hudson River. And when we get there, we're going to learn a lot more about the eagles. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
All right.
That this is ttown.org. Is Scenic Hudson is going to be sponsoring this thing, and it's ttown.org about the Eagle Fest and our Eagle Train. And then one more, and this is Gilderland Public Library on the 24th at 7 in the evening, Cuba. I'll be doing the program about Cuba at the Gilderland Public Library Friday evening, the 24th at 7 p.m., no charge.
How has your show, your presentation, streamlined and improved since you first began doing this in Somerset?
Oh, way better. Way better.
It's better now?
Oh, way better. I mean, it was hardly any room for improvement, but wow, did we ever.
The choreography improved and everything else?
The song and dance routine.
Oh, that's terrific,
much
Rich. Yeah. Nancy Castillo, what's going on at Wild Birds Unlimited?
Well, we are getting ready and talking about the great backyard bird count that's coming up. It's done every year over the four-day President Day weekend. So this year it would be Friday, February 17th through Monday, February 20th. And it's a great, what's called a citizen science project, a great way for everybody to get involved by just counting birds. You can do it one time over that weekend for as little as 15 minutes, report it to Cornell, and it'll be put into a huge database that helps scientists understand more about bird migration, bird behavior, bird populations.
And you do it anywhere?
You could do it anywhere, out your own window. You could do it at parks. You could do it, you know, on a hike. You can do it multiple times throughout the day, multiple times throughout the weekend. To help you understand how to do it, Wild Birds Unlimited is having a program to help just talk about how to participate.
Like a training
in the great
program.
Yep, how to participate in the Great Backyard Bird Count. And we're going to be doing that on Monday, February 13th at 6 p.m. at Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga on Route 50 at the Shops of Wilton. Just call to register. Our phone number is 226-0071. And,
terrific.
Of course, that's 518.
This one, before we get back to the phones, this one came in via email from Brian, who says, just wondering if you were aware of the Ross gull that was spotted up in Tupper Lake.
Been there, done that. And that's a super little bird. Now, check my blog in the Albany Times-Union for a nice series of photographs
of the Ross gull.
Of the Ross's gull.
Yeah.
Can't say enough about that cute little, it's like a dove out of the Arctic.
Huh. And it's a rarity?
Oh, mega.
Very good. And so your blog is once again?
Times Union, blog.timesunion.com.
All right.
And look at birding.
Oh, look for Rich Guthrie and birding. Let's go to Barbara in Grafton. Barbara, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's the first time I've called you, but I listen quite often.
Well, that's great.
I really appreciate you guys for all you do.
Thank you.
My question is, well, it's not really a question at first. It's an explanation. I don't feed birds because we have 8 acres in Grafton up on the hill, and there's lots of bear traffic. And people I know who have put up bird feeders have stories of bears just tearing them apart, destroying beehives, all that. I would love to feed the birds. How do I go about feeding them without attracting bears?
Okay, without attracting bears.
Barbara, you're probably going to have to relegate your bird feeding to the winter months when the bears are are hibernating.
Okay.
There is no such thing as a bear-proof bird feeder. they're just too big.
Couldn't
they're just
you
too strong.
Hang it on a wire? From tree to tree, hang it very high that you could pull in like a clothesline?
I have seen those be successful. I have seen pictures of bears also climbing that tight rope.
Worth the price of admission right there. I would do it just for that show.
But, you know, just regular, easy bird feeding, hanging it in your tree or putting it on a pole system or something like that, yeah, you're probably best to do it in the months that they are not active.
Like right now?
Yep.
Right now, okay. Until when? When do they start coming around again?
Sometime in the spring. It depends on local conditions, but they'll start waking up from their long snooze about March, middle March, thereabouts. It could be as late as April. So in Grafton, you're pretty high elevation over there. And I would say you're safe. You've got several months of good bird feeding and watching ahead of you.
And Barbara, if you don't mind being a little bit more labor intensive, if you wanted to try to feed during the summer, you could put out a feeder and just you have to be religious about putting it out in the morning and taking it away, putting it away every single night. You just cannot leave them out overnight and take the chance that the bears will find it.
There you go.
Correct.
All right. Barbara,
thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And we appreciate your first-time call. Thanks a lot. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo here. And Cindy in Queensbury. Cindy, you're on.
Hi. This is for Rich and Nancy. I have a mockingbird that is literally chasing anything that goes near my feeders. Now, normally I can tell what the weather's going to be because I have 30, 40, 50 birds coming in, including my pileated. But this mockingbird drove everybody away, and I don't see them for days on end, and I didn't see them before the storm. What can we do about this mockingbird?
Go ahead, Nancy.
Oh, boy.
Are they bothering tube-type feeders or just
I have tube feeders plus the log feeders.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, no. Well, let me just
I didn't know we could do that. I'm sorry. We did that from the computer. I apologize to everybody.
Mockingbirds are that way. They are very, very territorial. They're very bossy. They're very scrappy. And all I can say is that mockingbirds behave that way. You can try to put a bird feeder on the other side of the house while Mr. Mocker is on the left side. You could be feeding the birds on the right side. And, so good luck with that. Mockingbirds are tricky little devils.
Yeah. I guess what I was getting at is trying to put out a type of feeder that they have less success being able to perch on. They have an easy job sitting on a tray feeder or a hopper feeder. Apparently they're on your tube feeders, perhaps like a mesh feeder that they have to cling to would be less accessible to them. But it wouldn't stop their aggressiveness overall.
Yeah, they're kind of like the boss bird. They don't tolerate anybody, no matter even if it's not a competition. You know, they chase whoever happens to show up.
Just because.
It's not about the food.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Joe in Lanesboro. Joe, you're on.
Yes, thanks, Rich and Ray. I love the show. I have a question similar to the one a few callers ago had problems with the birds not coming in the feeders. I live by Pontusic Lake, about 1,000 yards off, kind of almost in the woods. And I've been blessed by having up to 34 species of birds on any given day come to my feeders.
Wow.
And then since the end of November, I have had very few, occasional black-capped chickadees. Yesterday, there were like one or two blue jays. And I'm pretty diligent about making sure they're clean, the higher-end type of food and suet and thistle. So I'm a little perplexed. I'm retired, so I'm out there a lot. I don't see any predators. I have seen predators before, but I haven't seen any out there. And there's no cats or other animals. And the nearby neighbors, I know they don't feed their birds.
Well,
so I'm a little perplexed. Why I've been there for 10 years, and it's been wonderful to just sit up in front of my window and just enjoy the entertainment.
It's been a very mild winter
so far,
and I think birds have been sort of complacent about getting lunch chow, so they're probably roaming around having a good old time, but when they need you, they'll be knocking on your door, and that will be I'm going to predict you're going to be busy tomorrow.
Right. You know what? Do you have snow cover, Joe, or ice cover?
Yes.
Okay.
I do have snow cover.
Okay.
Yep.
They could have been slow coming back as long as the ground wasn't covered. As Rich said, there's lots of natural food sources that are out there, and they will almost always choose natural food sources over your bird feeders until they really need it. And, once they get covered by snow, once your natural food sources get iced over or during a storm, you'll see them start to turn to those feeders. The other thing is don't underestimate the possibility that a predator might be around, perhaps when you're not around, whether a stray cat or a hawk that's kind of patrolling the area. Sharpshinned and Cooper's hawks have been busy at feeders. You know, during the winter, they get pretty busy. So don't underestimate the possibility that there could be a change in the predator status around your feeders.
Joe, thank you very much for the call. We are joined today by Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited and our own Rich Guthrie. And back to the lines we go at 800-348-2551. Robert in Saugerties. Robert.
Good afternoon. Hi. I have a strange observation.
Okay.
I saw a European, specifically a British robin on my feeder.
Really?
Yes.
Where are you?
And I'm in Saugerties.
Okay.
And it was last fall. It wasn't recent.
Did you get a picture?
No, but I was able to see it pretty good because it was about a foot away.
Yeah. Okay.
What Rich is trying to say is he's skeptical of you, Robert.
Hello.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm quite familiar because I go back and forth between the continents all the time.
Okay.
I'm familiar with the robin, and I was absolutely astonished.
I would be. As well.
Come on, Rich. Throw the guy a bone here.
Did you hear European?
And
the robin of Europe does not migrate that much. In fact,
it wasn't European. It was the one that you see in Britain and Ireland.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
they never come here. There's never been a sighting here, Rich.
That's the Christmas card bird of England and Ireland and Germany and Sweden.
Right.
They stay put all year round. They don't migrate so much.
And, I don't know why it was here unless somebody brought it here or something.
Yeah, it's probably if it were that. And I'm confident you know what you're seeing. Then all I can say is it got away from somebody. It was illegally kept as a pet or imported.
Yeah, that's what I was guessing. It was on my feeder, and I was like,
next time, get
you know, I couldn't believe it. I didn't have a camera with me. I was sitting in my hot tub, but.
Okay. All right. No pictures, please.
All right. I appreciate it. Well, Robert, thanks a lot. That's an interesting one. So, Rich, you know, you're very skeptical.
Well, you got to be. I mean, things happen. Birds have wings. They fly. They come to places where you're unexpected.
Yeah.
And this is what we talk about with things like green-tailed towhees and the like. But nowadays, we got to get the picture. I'm the eBird reviewer for this whole region, and I have to be very cautious about what goes through the filter system out to the public as a valid record sighting.
So that wouldn't make it?
No. And not that it wasn't a legitimate European robin at a bird feeder or doing whatever it was doing. But the thing is, it has to have certain credibilities of factors involved. Wild bird, unassisted, there on its own, by its own means. And a European robin just, without the picture. And even with the picture, you know, there's a bird down in Pennsylvania right now called the black-backed oriole. It's endemic to central Mexico, the mountains of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's doing in Pennsylvania is anybody's guess. But there's plenty of people that are speculating that this was a caged bird got loose. And although it's illegal to do such a thing, people do it. So I'm not holding back that this thing was not a European robin. It just doesn't belong here. And for the record,
you need proof.
It will not pass muster.
Like a UFO sighting. You'll need proof for an extraordinary story.
Yeah, Bigfoot. And, you know, UFOs and
have
all that stuff.
Have you seen Bigfoot?
I've heard about them.
Nancy, over by the Wild Birds Unlimited, have you seen the Bigfoot?
Oh, yeah, just right back over.
See? All right, please don't feed the Bigfoot. Brianna in Northampton. Brianna, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was driving home from work a couple months ago in early December, and this is in Massachusetts in Hadley, and a bald eagle flew overhead about 20 feet above my car. And I mean, I knew it was a bald eagle because it looks like the bird on our currency. And,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Is that a normal occurrence? I didn't think they were this far east.
Well, you were lucky you, and I can understand your excitement. And yes, bald eagles have one of our remarkable success stories, have made a remarkable comeback from the brink of extinction. Here in the Northeast, they were biologically extirpated in New York.
DDT,
and all that bad stuff. The death mm-hmm. chemicals, deodorant, DDT, endrin. Anyway, they're back now, and they're back. There was a vacuum out there, and they're filling it in a hurry. And that's why we're going on this eagle trip on Saturday with out of Poughkeepsie to Croton Point, where the Eagle Fest will be going on. You can see in the Hudson Valley, there's more than 100 bald eagles going on
wow.
right now.
And, but not so many in Northampton.
One in Northampton, well, you know, they're moving around. They're looking for nest sites. And, in fact, they are setting up housekeeping as we speak. This is a nesting season is beginning for bald eagles.
And where do the bald eagles live? Way high up?
Way high up. They build this huge nest. They use it year after year. And they
in
keep
a tree or a cliff?
It, top of a treetop. And they choose a sturdy, tall tree, usually near water.
Huh.
Yep.
Very interesting.
That's your best chance of seeing them this time of year is near some open water, so along the rivers, lakes that are big enough to still have some open water.
They eat fish exclusively, or they eat rodents too?
They will take carrion. If they find a roadkill or a deer carcass, they're in.
What about other birds?
No, not likely.
Over to Rita in New Paltz. Rita, are you there?
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
While I was on hold, I was actually looking up my question. I was wondering about food that I have in my refrigerator that I could share with the birds because I hate throwing it out. And I'm happy to see there's a chart here. It's called Household Foods for Birds that are safe, that are... Yeah, so I always knew about bread. That's like, and my mother used to do suet. But I see what's on here that I'm surprised are apples, and then under fruit, it mentions what birds would like them. And I'm trying to think, like with an orange, is a bird going to need an orange?
That's what that blackback oriole in Pennsylvania is feasting on.
The blackback oriole from Mexico likes oranges.
It likes oranges, and it's almost exclusively feeding on oranges. But I'll tell you something. You can put the oranges out now, and you probably won't get any takers.
Right.
You need an educated bird to eat an orange. They have to have been exposed to it before. And then they watch other birds, and they learn, and they try it, and they say it's good, and they off you go.
Well, it's got peanut butter on here, which I think that's like the suet thing, like somehow you make it with a mold or something.
You can do that, yeah.
Or even just spread it on a tree and like with the back of a fork.
Yeah, well, butter knife or a spatula.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
What's the weirdest food on that list, Rita? What's the weirdest food?
What about berries? Because I got cranberries in my refrigerator.
Do it.
Do it.
I do want
to. And then chop it up, and would you just, my friend has a feeder, my neighbor.
Yeah, just put them
in. So I would, I'm not sure, so just make a whole chopped up whatever.
Yes. The grapes could be put out. When you put the orange out, just make sure you cut that orange. Don't put it out as a whole orange.
Oh, right. You got to slice it.
Yeah. If you put an apple out, put it out, as a half an apple.
Uh-huh.
Like Rich said, your best chance of those fruit-eating birds are during the summer when some of our known fruit-eating birds, return to our area. But there are a number of fructivores out there. So do want to just say one thing about the bread. bread is a filling type food that doesn't provide a whole lot of nutritional value to the birds. So you will see activity on it, but it could be filling them and not providing a lot of nutritional value to them at the expense of something that could be higher fat or higher protein.
This is interesting, though. I mean, if you can take stuff out of your fridge. Like, I got some lasagna in there. Throw some lasagna out for the birds, yeah?
Hey, crows love it.
Crows love lasagna?
Nothing wrong with it.
Who knew? Our number here is 800-348-2551. We will take a break, and we'll be right back with Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo.
Support for WMC comes from Union College Concert Series, presenting a concert by pianist Eric Liu from Philadelphia's Curtis Institute of Music, performing works by Mozart, Schubert, and Brahms. Open to the public, Sunday, February 12th, 3 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. And George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here today, joined by Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited and our own Rich Guthrie. It's the Bird Show, and the number is 800-348-2551. Good luck getting through, though. The lines have been loaded the whole show. Before we get back to the phones, this one came in via email from Phil in Ludlow. It's a long email. Hopefully I can edit on the fly here. My feeder is unusually busy this year. This winter. Is it because we started feeding them early in November, earlier than normal? A cardinal pair visit every day, taking turns, one eating while the other was nearby keeping watch. Over the weekend, a second female showed up, and the two females would take turns with the male. That is, the females would come together, then give the male a chance. I always thought cardinals mated for life, do they? And maybe they're, a polygamist. My wife also always wants me to buy hulled sunflowers because of the mess in the spring. I didn't this year, and she's right. Just heard the eagle conversation. There's an eagle wandering up and down the Chicopee River in the Ludlow Indian Orchard, Wilbraham Stretch. Well, Phil in Ludlow, you've covered several different topics. Let's see if we can go back to the first one. The cardinal pair, and there's a male and a female. The one watches while the other eats, and now a second female shows up. Tell us about the dynamic.
Well, here's what happens. During the winter, cardinals are very sociable. They'll gather in small flocks and stay together. Come springtime, it's time to pair off and move on.
Sure.
And I'll tell you something. The male cardinals are very defensive of their territories. Female cardinals are very defensive of their males. They will aggressively fend off any rival females. However, the males, on the other hand,
they go with the flow?
Yeah, they kind of like, hey.
A couple of drinks, you never
tempest
know.
Tempest futured here. Here we go.
All right.
But in any event,
one of the things during the winter, too, you have to remember that some of those females could be young birds as well. So hanging out as a family unit during the winter. But also one good thing or thing I want to remind you about just about now. And as February goes on, you're going to start hearing some of those cardinals singing.
Yeah.
And both the males and the females sing. So start listening for that singing going on. Those type of courtship activities start as early as late winter.
The chickadees, cardinals, the woodpeckers are drumming.
Titmice.
Spring is in the air.
Yep.
And the first question Phil had was, is the fact that his feeder is unusually busy because they started feeding earlier in November than usual?
It could be. Birds seek out sources in fall for where they might visit throughout the winter. So that could have been a factor.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Linda in Salt Point. Linda, thank you for waiting.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
My pleasure.
Listen, I have a question about a particular bird. My husband and I usually hear this bird later in the season, and to us it sort of signifies spring is here, though we did hear it this morning. Now, my question is, I was hoping you could help me identify this bird.
Oh, I love this.
Are you going to do a little imitation?
Okay.
All right, do the imitation. This
Pardon?
Is great. Do the imitation.
Well, we call it an oo-oo bird,
ooh-ooh.
But the sound is the sound is. And we usually hear it in the morning. We don't hear it throughout the day.
Is that it?
No, it's sort of a.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Or phonetically, Phoebe.
Boy, here's Judy. Well, what you're hearing, I think, it sounds like you may be hearing the black-capped chickadee. And January is when they start chiming in. And
the black-capped chickadee.
Chickadee-dee-dee.
Can we hear that one more time?
The black-capped chickadee.
Yes. Yeah. And if you get close to their song, you can talk to them. They'll come and see you and check you out. And
oh, we have done that.
Like you very much.
Well, I haven't seen them, but we've had a chorus going back and forth from the front porch.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
now you know. At least we have a good idea of what it might be.
Okay. Well, thank you very much,
Linda.
That
thanks
was
so.
A question.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate you waiting around for that, and thanks for the sound effects. Fred in Wineskill. Fred.
Just two comments and a question. Maybe that European robin jumped on a cruise ship.
That could
over.
Be. Ship-assisted, but into Saugerties, New York. Maybe
you worked his way up or down once he got here. Yeah.
Well, the freighters come up and down the the ocean liners come up and down the Hudson River. And some foreign crews are known to have cage birds in their cabin as mementos or emergency meal.
Okay.
Now, the question I have, though, is I really like the crows. I like them. I watch them going to and from work in the morning and in the afternoon, going back home at night. Is it okay to feed them like kibble dog or cat food?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Because I've been bringing them in with that, so I was wondering. And then the other thing I wanted to say was down on the Hudson near Peekskill, where the train goes through like a bay. Mm-hmm. Back in 01, when I was going up and down because of the World Trade Center, I one time saw like about 15 or 20 eagles, and there was a lot of young ones. They weren't bald yet, but they were just chasing each other around and right on the ice. You know,
and they do that.
There's about 15 of them.
That's what we're going to look for this Saturday at the Eagle Fest at Croton Point Park, County Park at Croton Point, New York. And that's right in that neighborhood. We're going to be looking
for one question, too, because so many people dislike the crows in the cities and towns. I heard they like light because that way they can see if there's a predator coming up. So I was thinking, like in Troy, on the hill off of Prospect Park, why don't they just set up a bunch of lights there in those woods and let them just roost in that area where there's no homes?
Well, I don't know that there's a motivation in seeking out light.
Yeah.
Because before they were cities, the crows would congregate nonetheless.
Thanks, Fred. We appreciate the call. Now, you mentioned that the bald eagles don't lose their hair for how old are they before they go bald?
Bald, the old English word for white is bald.
Ah, I see.
White-headed eagles.
But when they're young, they don't have that problem.
Right. Not a problem. That's a sign of maturity. That's a badge.
You get toupees for the little things. What do you think? Yeah, that's very nice. Let's go over to Anne in Beacon. Anne.
Hi. The email letter kind of stole my question there, but
rats.
I'm interested in the differences between the two sides of my house. We've got a south side and a north side, both with cedars, and they seem to attract different species. We've got the typical urban birds, I guess, but also lots of different woodpeckers too. But my initial question was about these cardinals that are showing up. One afternoon last week, I had 5 males and 4 females all at the same time. And they don't usually get up on the feeder, but they've been hopping right up on the feeder here. And I was curious, too, about the social life of cardinals. Mm. So if there's any more enlightening you can give us about that.
Well, as I mentioned, the cardinals are they're gregarious in the winter, but that'll end in a few weeks where they'll pair off. They'll kick the kids out and set up their own little territories, and the little guys will have to find their own friends and team up there. So
they are children or offspring of the adults that we
well,
see.
Not necessarily limited to that extended family. They will tolerate strangers in their midst, and but mm-hmm. again, as soon as the buds start bursting, they'll be off on their own.
And cardinals are by nature ground feeders, so you might also be seeing some difference in. You say that you have different birds on different sides of your house, that could depend on the type of feeder that you have there, the type of habitat that is on each side of the house. So that could be contributing the different type of birds that you see on different sides of the house.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have heavy growth of rhododendron on one side and pretty much open
bare
trees
all about
on the other.
The vegetation that's available. So,
and thank you very much, our guest here today, Rich Guthrie, and also Nancy Castillo, and Bob in Old Forge is on. Bob.
Yes, some time ago, up in Old Forge, just off of Route 28, I was in a driveway up near the Rondax Road. And coming out the driveway, I saw this tree stump, probably 2 feet diameter, good foot and a half, I would say closer to 2 foot diameter. And it stood maybe 7 feet tall. And as I drove past it, the upper part was moving, the upper half. And I slowed down and I looked, and it was an owl.
Oh, really?
And the owl was the same diameter as the stump, and the feathers blended right in with the stump. And it actually, the stump was only half of that height. This owl was 3 feet tall.
Did you get a sense of the color?
I couldn't believe it. And it was the same color as the tree bark, the okay. blackish, grayish bark.
Yep.
And as I passed it, it rose up off that stump and flew, and you wouldn't believe the trees, you know, were fairly close. And that gigantic owl maneuvered its way in between all those trees. It must have had a wingspan of 7 or 8 feet. It was gigantic.
It's huge.
And
huge.
I couldn't believe it. I've never seen anything as big as that in my life. The owl was fully 3 feet tall, and, well, the stump was nearly, if it wasn't 2 feet diameter, it was mighty close to it. It
okay,
was,
well,
Rich Guthrie, is this true? Could this happen? A gigantic owl of this proportion?
A very big owl. You know, Old Forge is right in the heart of the Adirondack
yeah,
Mountains of
sure.
New York.
Yes.
And, well, we have three candidate owls for that neighborhood. The first would be the barred owl, and the other would be the great horned owl. Both of those are big owls and of that type of coloration. Our biggest owl is called the great gray owl. And I'll put folks on notice that the great gray owl, while being very normally found way far north in Canada, is this year, a few of them have been working their way south almost at the border, at the Quebec side of the New York border. And over in Maine, there's a couple of sightings of great gray owls.
So this could be?
Could be. That would be great. I would suggest that it's probably one of those three types of owls. And being up there in the heart of the Adirondack Mountains, they could possibly be any one of them. The great gray is our largest owl, but it's so rare around here that when one of us shows up, it gets a lot of attention from the bird-watching community.
I have never seen one like it before or since, and it had nearly a flat head on it.
Flat head.
That would be just appearances.
Well, Bob, thank you for that call. We'll try to get another one or two in here before we wrap it up. Lee in Saratoga County. Lee.
Hey, how you guys doing? Great show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say real quickly, you know what? Anything's possible. They had a European kestrel a couple years back on Martha's Vineyard, and every birder on the East Coast was there. So you never know. You had the kite that was down in the Mid-Hudson region a couple years ago as well.
You're absolutely right about that. And I believe that was a red-footed falcon that was at Martha's Vineyard a
right.
few years ago. Those things do happen. The chances of a European robin showing up on North American shores, especially inland, 120 miles inland, is really unexpected, unless it was ship-assisted.
I agree with you. My question, however, was... Has anybody talked to you about, you know, the effects of West Nile virus or avian bird flu on any of the native populations here in New York? I really haven't heard a lot, but, you know, there's some speculation.
Okay.
I'm a raptor snob myself, so we're always kind of on the lookout for that type of stuff.
Well, apparently, if there's an effect, it's negligible because we're not seeing any severe impacts on our wild bird populations. There may be some minor ones or occasional ones. I won't call it minor, but occasional, but
okay.
not severe.
Well, thank you for that call, Lee. We appreciate it. A couple of emails here that came in. This one's from Trudy, who says, just to let you know, during October, I had the occasion to travel down the Housatonic River toward Kent, Connecticut, and frequently in the river, I saw 6 cormorants. I'm positive this is what they were, but I found this rather strange. Agreed?
Not so strange. Cormorants are a large aquatic bird. They look like a duck. They're related to the pelican, remotely related. And they're a fish-eating bird that are nesting in the Hudson Valley, and I wouldn't be surprised that they're nesting in the Connecticut River Valley and up on Lake Ontario, huge colonies up there. So they are found here. They migrate through the area and sometimes by the hundreds.
And they're freshwater, or will they go to
both.
Saltwater too?
Saltwater in the winter, freshwater in the summer.
All right, this one came in from Gregory. Have you ever seen ravens down here in the Hudson Valley, or do you have to go further north? Any place you might recommend to see them in the wild?
almost anywhere nowadays, anywhere in the Hudson Valley, all the way down, and even in New York City, just to report midtown, uptown Manhattan, there's ravens. I remember being in downtown by Canal Street, there were ravens. In Brooklyn, there are ravens. Long Island, there are ravens. Ravens have really moved in with a vengeance, and I love them for that.
And they're bigger than crows.
They are bigger than crows. They're huge crow.
And they sound different.
They do. They sound like, and they have a wonderful repertoire. They sound like a goose sometimes, and they're beautiful flyers. They are beautiful aerobatic birds.
My life is complete. You did the raven sound. Nancy Castillo, how do we find out more about Wild Birds Unlimited?
You could check us out online, saratogasprings.wbu.com.
And Rich Guthrie, the blog, old boy.
TimesUnion.com. Blogs, and look up for the birding.
And if people have an image of a rare, say, a gray owl.
I have some pictures lined up from some of our listeners. It's richardpguthrie@gmail.com. Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie.
Well, thank you very much both for being here. Support comes from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe, and from local artisans with weekly tastings, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and no moo dairy free. Handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And the Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for over 25 years. Independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo for being here today. Thanks to the great Zachary Malloy, who was at the controls. Thanks to Carol Lapani for answering the phones. And thank you for calling. Great calls today, as always, on this bird show. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the Science Forum. Once again. Okay, stand by for news.